Boker Tov world. Today's daf in Masechet Chulin brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh is daf Tzadi Aleph. And we are holding at the very first word of the daf, so we better get back into the sugya. Remember, we're trying to figure out if Eliezer ben Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that only one side of the animal has a gedan asha, either the right thigh or the left thigh. And his lashon was a little bit opaque. What he said was, "Hada'at note le'tzehu yamin." Now we weren't sure what he meant when he said "Hada'at note." Did he mean his own logic of the issue? And that would be based, as we said yesterday, on the question of whether we should view this as a typical wrestling match in which the two wrestlers would be facing each other, and one would put his hand around the other, grab him, and then put his hand all the way around, grab him on the thigh and pull, and that would have been what would have caused the damage to the gedan asha. Or was it actually a raya from the pasuk that he had, and he was referring to Dat Torah, and he was ready to actually stake in his Sir Malkus on it. And he felt that you would be Chayev Malkus, because it would be a Hatra'a Vadai, if you were given a Hatra'a not to eat the Tzad Yamin. That was our question, and we were looking all over to see if we could find a basis for it, determining whether it was a Deraisa or whether it was just a personal Dat Lotet. And we found it, we thought, in the Mishnah of Psachim, where over there, we were talking about the din of a gedan asha and how you would have to burn it on the 16th. And so we were trying to figure out what that could possibly be referring to, because, I mean, if it's a gedan asha and it's usher to eat, then it wasn't part of the chiyav of eating lechatchila, so why didn't we just dump it? And if it is actually considered to be the other one, it was considered to be meat, then why didn't you simply eat it? And if you didn't, and nobody wanted to eat it, or it was left over, you ran out of time, then you should have just included it in the overall rubric of notar. Why mention it separately? That was our raya. And yesterday we said, well, you know, maybe the two gidim got mixed up. You didn't know which one was which, so you couldn't burn it because maybe this one was the right one, was the left one, you should eat it. But on the other hand, you couldn't eat it because maybe it's the right one, you couldn't eat it. So it's not a raya that we don't know which one. So today, on Daf Tzadi Aleph, right at the top, we have an alternative approach, actually, to that Mishnah. And the alternative approach is not an alternative approach that's very positive. It's an alternative, a true approach that tells us why you cannot bring a raya from that Mishnah to what Rabbi Yehuda would hold. Because, says Rav Ashi, what we could be talking about is not the gedan asha itself. That, indeed, we have no way of knowing. Maybe that's included in the notar. I don't know. But what it might be referring to is the shuman of the gedan asha. So there are these fats that surround the nerve itself. And that, as the Braita said, midioraita detanya, shamno mutar. Midioraita, there's no iser in eating that fat. However, Yisrael, being as they're very Kedoshim and they don't want to get close to anything that resembles the Yisr of Chelev, they asser the Shuman of the Gid to themselves along with the Gid itself. So Yisrael Kedoshim Nagubo Isr. So because of that, you can't eat it because you cannot go against the Chumrah that Yisrael was Mekabel on itself. But you can't dump it because Meikra didn't deraisa, it's part of the Korban Pesach and every last bit of the Korban Pesach is supposed to be eaten. So we don't include it under normal notar. We set it aside so that you should understand this is a piece that is always going to end up getting burned, and not because of anything that has to do with Rabbi Yehuda at all. Ravina says, I have another explanation of why this has nothing to do with Rabbi Yehuda. It might be talking about what we learned from Rav Yehuda, not to be confused with Rabbi Yehuda, of course, from Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, and that is that very important first halacha, the identification. What do you mean? What nerve is the nerve that the Torah is referring to when it talks about the gedan asha? The Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, you've got to understand that there are two completely different Gid Hanoshas. And if we're talking about it from a simple medical point of view, you want to identify the nerves that run down the thigh and they come out of the spine. And this is the very important sciatic nerve, which everyone is familiar with, is causing a lot of problems in certain places. And he explained that there are two different sections to that nerve, and it bifurcates. And actually, there are two different parts of the Gid HaNasheh. One is called Gid HaNasheh HaPnimi. Now, the Pnimi is the one that faces the other leg. So, in other words, on the inside of the thigh. And that one, it's called Pnimi because it runs down the bone as well, as we'll see. That one is usur, and you'd be chayav midi raisa for eating it. But there's also a Gid HaNasheh, which is the chitzon. Now, that one is only usur midi rabbanan. And there, you would not be chayav, but you would not be allowed to eat it. So there, we've got two. I think that Akiva had sent us a picture, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct? Akiva, is that you? Okay. So, I mean, the fact is that there's actually different Piskei Halachas about this between mostly, it's not an Ashkenazi Sephardi breakdown, it's an Ashkenazi / Sephardi versus Taimani argument about what constitutes the Pnimi and what constitutes the Chitzon. So what we're talking about are actually different nerves here. And the sciatic nerve is the nerve that we're referring to over here as the Gid HaNasheh. And this, everybody's makabel. That apparently has been the halacha forever. And the only machlokas that we find is benogea the chitzon. So now the sciatic nerve is the Pnimi, and it goes along, as we're going to see, the Gemara defines it, it goes along the entire thigh. And not only that, it has a lot of branch nerves, as the Gemara is going to explain later, and those branch nerves innervate the entire thigh. And because of that, it's an incredibly difficult job. As we saw earlier, we don't trust the butcher to actually do a job like that. We spoke about in the Mishnah, the Machlokas, and each one of those branches has got to be gouged out of the thigh, which is why we said yesterday, we're not going to do that and then bring up that messed up thigh onto the Mizbeach because of Hakriveyu Nala Pechatecha, Yirtzecha, Yisav Amecha. Because of that, we said it isn't nice, but even if you hold that the Gid HaNasheh is usher to the Mizbeach, which itself, of course, we saw was a machlokas yesterday, it makes a heck of a mess to actually take it out. So that one is the Pnimi. It runs closer to the inner leg, in other words, the inside, that faces the other leg, and it actually runs along the entire thigh. And that particular one is the one that goes above, runs on top of the muscle originally, and that's the al-hakaf, and then it innervates the muscle. The Rabbanan asserted also the Gid HaChitzon. So now the question is, what exactly is the Gid HaChitzon? That is a machlokes. According to the Ashkenazim, the Gid HaChitzon is the femoral nerve. And according to the Taimanim, it's some of the Sfarim go along with them, it's the peroneal nerve. But and that is very, very different places, closer to the bottom of the outside of the Yarech or the midpoint of the outside of the Yarech. And it makes a big nafkamina in terms of, obviously, what kind of meat you're going to eat without a proper, the Ashkenazim don't do it at all anymore, to remove the Gid HaNasheh. Anyway, so that could be the simple explanation. Since the Gid HaChitzon is only Asur Drabbanan. Well, we can't throw it out because it's really part of the Basar of the Karban Pesach that we're mechuyav to eat midiraita. On the other hand, we can't be over on the Isser, and because of that, it ends up becoming Noza. And therefore, it is a perfect explanation for the Mishnah without coming on to any problems about a suffix, which one, and Rabbi Yehuda was misopic, and nothing to do with Rabbi Yehuda at all. Okay, let's take a look at the Mishnah that we have later on. We're going to have this next week. Toshma. Somebody ate a kezayit of the Gid HaNasha on the right and a kezayit of the Gid HaNasha on the left. So it says in the Mishnah, well, then he would be chayev 80 malkiot, which means that he's chayev on each one separately, and that, of course, is the sheet in the Rabbanan who hold that you're chayev on both. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you only get 40. Okay, I mean, that's consistent with what we know about Rabbi Yehuda. However, the problem is, if Rabbi Yehuda does not know which one is the real Gid HaNasha, and the problem with Gid HaNasha is, or that you can't even say, well, the real Gid HaNasha, please stand up, because it's damaged. And therefore, the issue would be, how could Rabbi Yehuda say that you would get Malkus Arboim? Because if you don't know which one it is, you don't get Malkus at all. Since we know that according to Rabbi Yehuda, Hatra'at Safek is not considered to be Hatra'at. Now, we've been through this before. So, if it feels like deja vu, it isn't deja vu, you idiot. You learned this whole sugya. We're going to be going through the same rayas that we went through earlier. So, if Rabbi Yehuda knows which one is which, it explains why you would get Malkus Arboim, because you got a perfectly valid Hatra'ah. So, he thought, don't eat that, because if you eat it, you're going to be Chayiv. If he doesn't know for sure, how could you get any Malkus? Any one that you were warned of would be a Hatra'at Safek. And since we are clearly not talking about over here that you ate them quickly together, because then it would have said Beferish, Shtei Kezesi Mishnehem, it doesn't say that. And therefore, it can't be that Rabbi Yehuda is doubtful, because we know that Rabbi Yehuda is the man Yomar holds Hatra'at Safek Lof Shema Hatra'at. How do we know that? Because of the same raya that we brought earlier, that if you have a guy who doesn't know which one of these, we won't say what, is his father, and he hates both of their guts, so he figures he might as well get both of them, so he hits one of them in the nose, and then he punches the other one in the stomach, and, or he curses first one of his possible fathers, and then he curses the other one, or maybe just curses both of them at one time. This guy's got real problems. And what the din would be there, so let's say he hits both of them at the same time, curses both of them at the same time, he would be chayev misa. And Rabbi Yehuda said, no, he's only chayev misa if he hits them both at the same time. But if it's one after the other, and therefore he needed two separate hatra'ot, the guy cannot be given a hatra'ah, because if somebody tells him, don't hit this guy, you're going to be over on hitting your father. Who's to say he's my father? And then when he hits the next one, he'll say the same thing. And therefore he would be potter. Now that says very clearly, according to Rabbi Yehuda, hatra'at safek is not a hatra'ah. Trevor, that phone is moving a little bit, or you are moving a little bit, but you're starting to become invisible again. This was the same gradual invisibility cloak that you put on the last time. Are we going to get to see you? No response from Trevor. A little bit of one eye. That's better than nothing, Trevor. There we go. Okay. Oh, Grandma, I lost Trevor again. Okay, so we definitely see that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you got to know which one is which. So how could Rabbi Yehuda hold that you get Malkus Arboim unless he knows which one is which? This conclusively proves that according to Rabbi Yehuda, he knows what's what. And when he said a da'at noteh, he meant the da'at Torah's noteh. Nah, not necessarily. Why not? Because maybe the Tana of the Mishnah holds with the other version of Rabbi Yehuda, who holds Hatra'at Safek Ishma Hatra'a. So according, I'll show you in a minute, and if that's true, then even if Rabbi Yehuda wasn't sure which one of those Gid Anashas was the real Gid Anasha, he would still be able to get Hatra'a, albeit Hatra'a Tzafek. Where do we see that? From the Braita, again, that deja vu kicks in really powerfully. Loto tiru mimeno ad boker, says Rabbi Yehuda, bo hakatuv litina seachar lo taseh. Lomar she'ein lo kinalav. So the Torah wanted you not to be chayav malchus, and therefore it provided you with an asay that's metaken lo taseh. V'hanotar mimenu ad boker be'esh tisrofu. So, therefore, lomar she'ein lo kinalav. Now note that Rabbi Yehuda did not say the reason you don't get malchus is because there is no way to give a person hatra'ah on a non-act, on a passive issue, because what are you going to tell them? Don't do that. Don't do what? I'm not doing anything. Don't leave it. What do you mean, don't leave it? Who's to say I'm going to leave it? Am I leaving it? Do you see me leaving it? I just haven't gotten around to eating it yet. Hold on, baby. And then by the time he tells you, hey, you left that. Yeah, what can you do? Basically, since it's passive, you can't identify a moment in which you can give him a tra'ah. So what the real reason should be is that there's no way to give him hatra'ah. But that's not what Rabbi Yehuda says. He says the only reason you don't get malchus is because the Torah provided you the mitzvah saseh of hanotar mimeno ad boker beish tisrofu. So apparently, according to this version of Rabbi Yehuda, the din is that hatra'ah tzafek is considered to be hatra'ah. Rabbi Yaakov Omer, that's not the reason you don't get Malkus. The reason you don't get Malkus, Lamin Hashem Uzeh, and Lamin Shem Dabi Lav Shein Bo Maaseh. You never get Malkus if you don't do anything. So a lav that you're going to be over passively, which is, of course, notar, you don't eat it. So not eating it is entirely passive. And there, you'll never get a malchus for not doing something, kolav shein bo maisa, en lo kinalav. But you see from here that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the only reason you don't get malchus is because it's a lav anitak la'aseh, and not because it is atra atza fake. So you can't prove anything, because if the Bishna is going according to that Tana, then Rabbi Yehuda's atra atza fake is considered to be atra at. Let's see. How about a raya from this part? Toshma. Ochal shnei gidim, shtei yerechot, shtei behemot. Somebody who eats two gid hanoshes from two different animals, from two of the thighs that would be machai of you. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, you still would only get arba'im. Now look, I mean, if you had to postulate a case of shtei yerechot, b'shtei behemot, you're obviously talking about the same side. I mean, you're trying to make sure that there's no other issue here. No, it's not a question of what side. Same side, two different animals, two different gidim. What about then? So I'm stripping away the issue of what side, right? And it's obvious that we're talking about over here, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Eino Sofeg Ela Arba'im. And since it says shtei yerechot b'shtei behemot, it's obviously we're trying to set up a situation where both of them are also, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. And that's why we only needed to set it up this way. It was for the purposes of Rabbi Yehuda. And nonetheless, Rabbi Yehuda, forget about why only 40. But nonetheless, Rabbi Yehuda does say that you get malchus, right? Now, this is only a right side. So how could you get malchus if he's not sure? So it must be that he is sure. Because, after all, it would be atra'at safek, sushma amina, pshitale. It's obvious that he knows, because otherwise, how would you get malchus arba'im? Now, from this, we're ready to say, yes, shma amina. But wait, so then why do you only get arba'im? Something's cuckoo. So, yipshitale, eno safek arba'im, am I safek arba'im? It's too low. Why do you only get arba'im, lo keshmoni? We should give him for each one, since he obviously got a hatra'ah on both. No, let pay his ayat. So again, as we learned before, since according to Rabbi Yehuda, we've got another machloket over here. This machloket is remember that normally, if somebody eats a birria, somebody eats a single ant, well, there sure is no kizayas in an ant. And if that's the case, why would he be chayev, which he is? Well, that's because of the concept known as birria. If the Torah asks in an ant, and if you eat the ant, then you're chayev. It's not a question of kizayas. The same thing ought to be true, you would think, of a gira nosha. If the Torah asks the gira nosha, then eating an entire gira nosha is a birria, and you would be chayev, no matter its size. However, as we're going to see later on, Rabbi Yehuda brings a raya from the pasuk that you're not chayev unless than a normal achila of a kizayit, even if you eat the entire git. So that's what the case is over here. You're able to combine these two git anoshas, even though one of them alone does not have a shear of a kizayit, and we want you to know that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you would only get arboim, Lamrot, there being two separate kidanoshes here, because the Torah is mapped on the shear of a kizayit. So therefore, Chmayaskin and Kongonda let the kizayit. These don't have a kizayit in one, they only have a kizayit in two. And we know that there's Sentra Machlorket, the Tanya, Achalo, somebody eats a kidanosh of Ainbo kizayit. He is chayev, says the Tanakama, and Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you'd only be chayev if there's a kizayit. And where does he get that from? Where does he get, not this kizayit, where does he get this whole idea from now that we've proved that it's actually a diraita according to Rabbi Yehuda, and nonetheless it's only the gid that is yamin, we said, he must know it from the Torah. Where? Where in the Torah? So Amar Rava, well, why do you think the Torah said, it specifically mentions, Alkein lo yochlu, B'nei Yisrael et gid anasheh kaf ha-yorech. What do you mean, ha-yorech? Kaf yorech. But kaf ha-yorech means the most powerful phi, and that means ha-miyumenet should be yorech, since most mammals actually are better and more powerful control of their right thigh. So because of that, it's a reference to the specific one, and we find many times in the Torah, we darshan that word of hey, meaning the one that is more miyumenet. Miyumenet has a double meaning. So it means right, but it also means the one that you're more expert in, more able to control. So somebody who's very well trained is miyuman. The Rabbana, how do they explain that? If it does indeed say the thigh, how could it mean both thighs? It should say gid yarech of either one. Ah, that's where we know that it's the sciatic nerve. Because when it says is gid hayarech, it means the nerve that innervates the entire thigh. And ahuda pashti sura bekula yarech. There's only one nerve. There's a lot of very important and thick nerves, but none of them actually start at the top and innervate the entire thigh. And that means it's got to be the sciatic nerve, and that is exactly the marker of how we know. It is the nerve, the poshti sura bekule yorech. It's got the entire thigh. He did it. Houdini, he did it. And it was just instantaneous. Trevor, if you would learn to do that, we'd never catch you. So the Rabbanan say the hey actually is a very important hey, but hey, it tells you which one the real Giranasha is. Afukesh Yitzon. Mashenkein, the nerve that you'll find that doesn't innervate the entire thigh, and it comes only down on part of that thigh. So if you hold, as I said, we have different shitas. If you hold like the Temani, that it's talking about the peroneal nerve, it's only there near the bottom of the thigh. How could that be kulei yarech? And even according to the Ashkenazim, that it's the femoral nerve, nonetheless, it is only from the midpoint, and therefore we identify the gid anosh as the sciatic nerve based on exactly this ace. It was very important, obviously. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Amar, that's not how he knew. Because everybody holds you need the hay to tell me the identity of the nerve. And therefore, the real way that we know that Rabbi Yehuda knew is because of an analysis of the pasuk. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, it's very strange that the pasuk would insist on saying the words behe of ko imo. That doesn't make any sense. It said beferish that Yaakov was attacked by this thing, this person that was Nevak. So why does it need to repeat at the end? And here's the crucial words. Of course it's Be'ef Koimo. I mean, you were describing a fight. So why did you restate Be'ef Koimo? Aha! That is extra to tell me that you need to view the wrestling match as an actual wrestling match in determining the real, not metaphorical, but the real fact in terms of how it affected his body. So you need to understand that which thigh was identified here, the thigh that would have been affected in a wrestling match. And since in a wrestling match, you've got these two wrestlers facing each other, one of them grabs the other guy, puts his hand around him so that his right hand is going to encircle the other person's body, reach down to his thigh and attempt to actually paralyze him, which is exactly what he did. But that would mean his right hand, which was on the left of Yaakov, went all the way around Yaakov's body, got to his thigh and pulled. And that would be exactly what would happen in a wrestling match. So according to this, note that this is the same svara that we said before, the dat noteh, right? But the dat noteh would only have been my own assumption that the fight over here was more than a metaphorical fight, that we can actually use it, la halakha, to identify a physical body, right? But now that we've pointed out that there's extra words in the pasuk that insist that this is the way you need to look at it, now it becomes a deraita. That's the difference. It's not a difference in the logic. It's just a difference in whether you're making the assumption that you have a right to apply a literal reading of the pasuk to identify the thigh, you see? So by putting in these words, you're letting me know, no, it's meant to be a physical image for you to analyze la halacha. That's the point. And if that's the case, it's not a dat noteh, it's a dat Torah. Now, this is merumas, gentlemen, in the fact that, and this is really very beautiful, the way that Rabbi Yehuda does this, by saying hadat noteh and leaving it in your hands, leaving it a bit opaque. Okay, what do I mean? Why did he do that? I mean, if he holds it to the right, you should say it. Because the point is, he's trying to show exactly this nekuda. Your dot would be noted this way anyway on a literal reading of the pasuk. Now, as to the question of whether I have a right to literally read a pasuk, that I'm leaving in your hands to figure out. So it's only when you recognize that you have these extra words, aha, you see, it wasn't just your personal dot that was not there. It's that you can derive this because you're told to use your dot. But in the end, it's all about the same dot note. So clearly this is the meaning of the pasuk. Yeah, bunch of boring guys. V'noshantem b'daf hayomi is what it says, for what I recall, somewhere in the... All right. Now, Reb Shmuel Bar Nachmanio. No, this was not a wrestling match face to face. The question over here is a fundamental question. What does Esav look like to a Jew? So now, the question is like this. Esav walks into Olam Haba and claims a chelek. Okay, after all, Ben Yaakov, Ben Yitzchak Avinu, grandson of Avram Avinu, spent his whole life developing the earth, as we see in the Gemara, in the Bibachem Yagid Zot. So he's in there, he's claiming his chelek. What does he look like? Does he look like a redneck, half-naked murderer? Or does he look like a big Rosh Hashiva or a Hasidic Rebbe with a big hat coming in looking like the biggest tzaddik in the world? I mean, gee, we know about those little piggy feet, and we know about those little virtue signalings, and we know that the biggest virtue signal is a big shtreimel or a big black hat. So obviously, Esav would be wearing a, depends if you ask a chassid or you ask a litvisher, but he'd be wearing either a shtreimel or a big black hat. Now the question is, how deeply does this affect Yisrael? So here is Yaakov Avinu, the primal Yisrael, walking along the street, and who does he meet? In the craziest place where nobody else is around, he meets Sarah Shel Esav, and it looks just like Esav. Well, now the question is, does he say to himself, oh my God, this guy is a gangster? Or does he say to himself, wow, where did this Talmud Chacham come from? That is the machlokas between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani says, well, Yaakov sees this guy, and he's obviously a gangster. And if he's a gangster, the din is never walk to the right of the gangster. You actually have to be on the left of a gangster, because the minute that he starts, he pulls his knife and he tries to get you, your right hand is going to be right there and you grab him and stop him. But if you walk with his right hand next to you, what are you going to stop him with? Your left hand, he'll get you before you get there, you see. So because of that, since Yaakov Avinu saw him as a gangster and he's an Ovid Kochavim, so I'm not going to walk on the side of this Nazi to his right. I'm going to walk on his left. If one of these guys starts walking along with you to have a nice casual conversation, your assumption always has to be he's going to knife you. That's for sure. Now the question is, okay, what do you do? Well, you could try Krav Maga, but if you don't want to start, you walk in such a way that you're on his left, not on his right. So you should be toflomi yumino. You keep the gangster to your right. That's what he held. Mashen came the Chachamim. They figured, wow, this guy is a big Talmud Chacham. And this, of course, is the other way of looking at it from Yaakov Avinu's point of view. Rav Shmuel Bar Acha, on the contrary, he saw this Ace of Sar as being, wow, this is the biggest tzaddik I've ever seen in my life. Look at him. He's got a shtreimel two times the size of any ger shtreimel. And so because of that, he says, look, I'm not going to walk on the right. He's such a Talmud Chacham. He's probably much bigger Talmud Chacham than me. I'll put him on the right. Because Ke Talmud Chacham nidmalo. And the Omar Mar Hamahalach Limin Rabo Arezabur. Somebody who walks on the right side of his Rav. I mean, what kind of boor is that? So he's certainly, Yaakov Avinu would have been mechabed him. And how about the Rabbanan? How do they say both of those are usher? How could it be both? Ah, the Rabbanan say, he crept up on him and he grabbed him from behind, obviously. And therefore, he got both of those thighs. Anyway.
Rabbi, are we talking about what happened in Nachal Yabok?
Yes. Are you at Nachal Yabok? Is this an introduction?
Right. There it is.
There we go. Okay.
I'm facing Nachal Yabok, but later today it will be Nachal Yabok.
Wow.
I'm crossing over. Okay, so it's today's plot.
So just watch, just be very careful about who gets to your right or who gets to your left, because Nachal Yabok has got some strange people. The Rabbana, So how did the Rabbanan, since the Rabbanan say we don't learn anything out of the wrestling match that the Torah tells us, we have to see this as a real wrestling match. So why did the Torah mention Be'af Koimo? It's not important to know Be'af Koimo because obviously we're talking about a match. We need this to teach us what Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said. The Omer Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, Behe of Koimo, teaches us something very important. Avak Margalotam Ad of Koimo. And we also have the pasuk that describes in the Novi Nachum the Anan Avak Raglav. So then, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu's path in life is b'sufah v'sa'ara darko through our lives, it's like a storm. And there is anan avak raglo. What is that avak raglo? That is the ongoing fight between Yaakov and Esav that goes through all of history, which is the story of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's passage, so to speak, through these short lives of Elam Hazeh. So it's Besufa uVesara veAnan Avak Raglav, an incredible drasha. So that the entire story of the presence of the Kisei HaKavod is a story of what happened and continues to go on and is happening in today's newspapers, and a question of whether do you see Trump as a gangster or is he supposedly somebody who's got brains and he's more like a Talmud Chacham? This is still the same battle, and the same day of Koimo continues. V'yomer Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, Loma nikra shmo gid hanashe. What does nashe mean? She nasha. It jumped up from its correct place, the Allah. It was displaced from its typical port where it was supposed to be on the Kaf. And because of that, it was incredibly painful and actually made it difficult to walk. V'chenu homer nashtag vuratan ayul nashim. So where the Torah describes in Yirmiyahu what happens to the soldiers of Bavel, when it says their power has left them, so it uses the word nashta. It's jumped away from them. Amar Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chanina, my dichtiv, davar shalach b'Yaakov. It's Hashem b'Yaakov v'nafal b'Yisrael. What does that mean? The davar shalach in the body of Yaakov, in the individual of Yaakov. And this is an incredible idea, that the very physical form of Yaakov Avinu, which was transformed at that moment, remember, into Yisrael by the insistence as a result of this battle. I want you to tell me my name is Yisrael, and that I deserve everything that I was given, and that those brachas are meant to be mine, and so on and so forth. That was a physical event, and this is the same thing that we learned from the Be'af Koimo. This is not to be viewed as a metaphorical event. It's to be viewed as a physical event, which teaches us that the very physical form of Yaakov Avinu was part of establishing the deeper nature of the identity of Yisrael. So, Adavar Shalach B'Yaakov, and in the end, Nafal B'Yisrael. Shepashat Yisrael B'Chol Yisrael, an event that under a single person's body should affect the identity of the entire nature of Yisrael is astonishing. And that's what the pasuk is referring to. A really beautiful, beautiful deed. Huh. Amazing, amazing. The Amar Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chanina, my dichtiv, what is meant by this weird thing that Yosef HaTzadik did when his brothers came back and he makes the seudah for them, and that was going to be the big seudah where he lets them know who he is and everything. So, as we've pointed out in the story, actually, Yosef gave them every reason to know that he was Yosef. And that was the point of the whole exercise, that he knew everything about them, And he puts them in their positions according to the way they were born. And he turns out he knows, as they told Yaakov Avinu, everything that they ever spoke about, even as kids. And he would tell us the secrets of our nursery rooms, as Yehuda tells Yaakov Avinu. How are we supposed to deny anything to this guy? I don't know. He knows everything. Anyway, so when they came back and he makes the Seuda, obviously, he's not going to be feeding them meat that they can't eat, right? So he tells that turns out to be his son, but he tells the Asher al HaBayit, he says, Utforach, Tevach, V'chein, bring them into the house, bring them into the kitchen, and do shchita, proper shchita, and then prepare it. So what does that mean? Tvorach, Tevach means to do a kosher shchita. Pralem Beit HaShchita, let them see that you did the rov and that you shechted the kana and the veshet. I mean, otherwise they're not going to be able to eat. And Hachain means take the Gid HaNasha out right in front of them. So now they know, okay, so now we have Yehuda's Hechsher. Is that good enough for you guys? Okay, so you see it's completely kosher. And all right, so then, but it still doesn't occur to them, of course, that he could possibly be Yosef. He just knows what we eat, you know. And of course, this would only work out. Kamandi Omar Gid HaNasha Nesal Levnei Noach. It's going according to Mandi Omar, who holds that even though they weren't Jewish yet, technically speaking, they may be Bnei Yisrael, but they have a din of Bnei Noach until Kabbalah Satorah. And yet he needed to take out the Gid HaNasha. So obviously they were not eating the Gid HaNasha even before Kabbalah Satorah. Getting back to the battle. Vayivater Yaakov Levado. So as it says over there, Barnea was left, Yaakov was left on his own. And Vayavek Ishimo Ad Alot HaShachar. So this is a strange thing. How could Yaakov allow himself to be left alone at night? I mean, isn't it a problem of being left alone? And doesn't it say right before that Vayavor et Ashelo, they had already crossed the Nachal Yabok and he brought over everything that he owned? It said, et kol Ashelo. So why did he go back to the other side to be left alone? It doesn't make any sense. If he already took the family over, and he already transported everything that he owned, kol asher lo, what was he doing there? Amar Rabbi Elazar, he went back because he left a can of tuna fish behind. So even though it was already kol asher lo was on the other side, but he suddenly remembers, oh my gosh, I forgot the can of tuna fish. Now, okay, I mean, a can of tuna fish in the middle of, a $5 million boatload of stuff. I mean, like, you got to go back for a can of tuna fish? Yes. Shembi Khan, from here we see an amazing thing. Tzadikim do not leave cans of tuna fish behind. Because Choviv Aleim Momonam Yoter Mikufam. They're ready to take chances, as everyone is, to make money. But, I mean, usually it's for more money than a can of tuna fish. But when it comes to a tzaddik, everything that he owns is so yoker because kokach loma lefishein poshtin yedeim begazel. They know what it means to actually own something. If you own something, it's because it was entirely and totally, not just legally, but deeply, existentially, your own. How are you going to leave it behind? After all, would Reb Chanina ben Dosa have left his chamor behind? God help us. So everything that you have is part of you. You can't leave that behind when you say, well, it's only my little finger. I mean, come off it, man. So, of course, if you shein poshtin yedeim begazel, they know the joy of actually owning something, but then you don't give it up. And then the pasuk goes on to say what happened. So this battle continued until the break of dawn. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. So what do we see from here? It's clear that a Talmid Chacham should not risk going out at night because, look what happened to Yaakov. And you see that as soon as the sun came up, the forces of evil left. That means that you need to worry more at night about what might happen to you if you're alone. Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana says, I got another Raya Miacha. How does Ruth know, Naomi know, when she tells Ruth that, don't worry, I guarantee you Boaz is going to stay out there and he's Zored Goren Asorim, and therefore he'll be there tonight. What makes her think therefore he'll be here tonight? I mean, he'll come back home, no? Apparently no. He's not going to come back home. You can be sure of that. A Talmud Chacham doesn't go out alone at night. Rabbi Abbo says, Miacha, Avram Avinu gets up early in the morning, Vayashkem Avram Baboker, Vayach Boshet Chamoro. Now, why in the world would Avram Avinu, who was a Zoriz, why would he wait until the morning to get the car ready and to go to the Akedah? Because you don't go out at night. That's why. Rabbana Amri Miacha. Since Yaakov Avinu told Yosef, Lechna re'et shlom achecha v'shlom hatzon. So since Yaakov Avinu told him specifically re'eh b'sha'at re'iyah, so it means that you're only able to be sure about the shalom of things in the daytime. Rav Amar Miacha, it says, Vayizrach lo ha'shemesh kasher avar penu'el. So, if that's the case, as Rabbi Akiva pointed out, how does this make sense? Sha'alti et Rabbi Gamliel et Rabbi Yeshua. You don't remember we were walking together in the butcher shop over there, the butcher shuk, the itlas of Imam. And what were we doing there? Well, we had all gone together to buy an animal because Rabbi Gamliel's son was making a wedding. And so we went to help out so that we could learn on the way. So we took a little adventure going to the Itlas and Imaus. And I asked him, how does he explain the words Vayizrach lo HaShemesh? I mean, yes, there are many people who actually believe that the sun rises and sets only on them. However, Yaakov Avinu was not one of those kind of people. So when it says Vayizrach lo HaShemesh, I mean, V'kishemesh lo levad zarcha, did the sun actually only rise for him? Halo l'chol olam zarcha, didn't everybody get that sunrise? So how do you explain that? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. So, what apparently Rabbi Yitzchak was the one who knew the answer, because otherwise how did Rabbi Yitzchak get in here? He wasn't even there. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Shemesh haba abba avuro, zarch haba avuro. What it means is that originally, Dichtiva yetze Yaakov mi bershava vayelech Haran. Now let's analyze the circuit. It says he already got to Choran. And then it says, Vayivga ba makom. Then it says he went to that place. That place is the Makom HaMikdash, which says Rashi went to Makom HaMikdash at Bikofza to Beitel. Anyway, he got to that place, and he ends up sleeping there. Now, did he get to Choron or did he not get to Choron? Vayele Choron means he got to Choron. And how did he now find himself halfway back to where he had started off from Beersheba? Ella must be like this. He actually did get to Choron. Vayele Chorona. But when he got there, he said to himself, good heavens, could I have actually gone by the place where all of the Oveis davened, Sheitpalalu Avotai, Vani lo Yitpalalti? So if this was actually the Makom, I was on my way to Choron, I should have stopped off at the Beis HaMikdash. I'm going back. This is so outrageous. I'm embarrassed. So he decides he's going back. The moment that he decided to go back, at that moment in the schus of his commitment, he finds himself back. So he now davens. Katsoli, he finished davening and now he wants to go back. Now, obviously, by the way, Tosis brings a raya from here. This is great. As far as the Zman of Tfilas Arvis is concerned, right? So how could he have decided that he's going back if it was already it must have been dark, because it says that Yaakov Avinu was the one who, at that moment, he was miyaseh the din of tefilas arvis. So then it would already be dark, but he wasn't allowed to go back. And here we're saying it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the sunset. Tosis brings a raya from here that the zman of arvis is from the plaga mincha, because otherwise the whole thing doesn't make sense. Isn't that great? Anyway, but getting back to the story. So since he got there instantly, he figured, okay, I'll go back instantly to Haran. We'll start moving, baby. You know, well, maybe not. Maybe he figured he'll get a hotel on the way, or he'll meet up with Barnea. Anyway, so then he wouldn't be alone anymore. So, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what? Tzadik zeh bo lebeit meloni v'yipater b'lo linah. This tzaddik has come to my hotel, and he's going to leave without sleeping. Of course, we learn from here that the Beit HaMikdash, this is why it's referred to, Divrei Hayamim, it's called the bedroom, the Chadar HaMitot. And he's not going to leave my bedroom without going to sleep because of that. Neis biad ba shemesh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts the sun down, and now Yaakov Avinu's got to spend the night. So anyway, that proves that he wouldn't have gone out once the sun set, because otherwise, what would be the point of Kippah HaShemesh? And then when it says Zorach lo HaShemesh, it means those same number of hours that the world was missing because of the early sunset. Those were the early, Ba'a HaShemesh needed to be especially a early sunrise to make up for that time. Okay, now, I got a problem. It says that Yaakov Avinu went to sleep. Once we're here, we're going to dorish the whole thing. So it says, Vayikach be'avnei hamakom. Mashma, that he took the stones, put them around his head, and that, of course, would have taken a lot of different stones. But then it says, after he wakes up, it says, Vayikach et ha'even asher sa mirashotav. He took the single stone that he had placed around his head. How do you explain that? Omar Rabbi Yitzchak, melamed shenitkapitzu kol otam avanim lemakom echad, v'kol achat v'achat omeret ala yaniach tzadik zerosho. Each one of these stones was fighting. I want his head. I want his head. I want his head. And therefore, as the Braita says, kulam nivlu be'achad, they all combined into one single stone. This, of course, is the whole basis, as the Mesillas Yesharim brings. This is the basis of all concept of Kedusha, of the interrelationship of the actual physical earth with the mind of a tzaddik, and how much it matters to the world what you do with it. And how Yaakov Avinu, this is, of course, the whole story of the Kedusha of Yaakov Avinu, the fact that Kofza Lo Haaretz, the fact that Yadav Vurnasu Kal Lalechet, all of this is the marker of the view, the whole parak of the nature of Kedusha. He bases on this idea. And that's, of course, it begins there. The Vayetze Yaakov Melamed Yitziat Tzadik Min HaMakom Oser Roshem B'Makom. For Tzadik's presence in a place makes a difference. That's that difference. So the entire Parsha, from beginning to end, is a description of the power of the physicality, which we just noted in Davar Shalach B'Yaakov and Nafal B'Yisrael, is the power of the physical body of Yaakov Avinu and his interrelationship with the world around him, and its massive implications for all of history in the terms of even the dust of the battle becomes an expression of the entire thrust of history and Yaakov and Esav. So the entire idea is this concept of kulam nivlu be'achad. These are not like, you know, a little cutesy pie kind of drushes. Anyway, and he then has a dream. So vayachalom v'ine sulam mutzav arza. Now, let's try to understand, what did that ladder, what shape did it take in his dream? Was it this little tiny ladder, or was it some type of massive vision that he had? Well, that ladder if you analyze it, had to have been, Kama Rachba Shav Sula, it had to have been Shmonat Alafim Parsaot, at least. Because otherwise, it doesn't make sense that it had Malachi Elohim going up and down. So if it was Shmonat Alafim Parsaot, that means that it was the entire size of the earth. It was over 20,000 miles wide. So it was meant to be actually covering the planet. Because since it says, Ine Malach Elohim Olim V'Yordim Bo, Olim means that you had to have had two, because it's Lashon Rabbi. Yordim is two. Now what happens when they meet each other? You've got four Malachim going up and down this ladder. And we know that each one, Kishapago Bahadade, Avilo Arba, means you've got four. But when the Pasuk describes the vision of Daniel about these Malachim, Ktibe Bamalach, Gviatoke Tarshish, that the body of this Malach was the width of the Pacific Ocean. The Gemirite Tarshish itself is Tre Alfe Parse. So if that's the case, this Tarshish put together times four equals the entire width of the earth. So that must have been the ladder that he saw. And it continues to say in the Braita, Olim, so what's the meaning of Olim V'Yordim? Olim means that they went up to the top of the ladder, O Mistaklim B'Dyupno Shel Ma'ala. So they take a look at the Merkava Shel Shechina, and of course the Merkava, the Ovais other Merkava, and on each one of the Chayota Merkava, there were four faces, and one of those faces was Pnei Adam, and that Adam was the face of Yaakov Avinu, because that's the Adam Atem of Yisrael. So they get up there and they see this incredible vision on the Merkava of HaKadosh Baruch Hu of this, what they view as some kind of super incredible Meda Malach face of Yaakov Avinu. And then they come down to the bottom of this ladder, and here's this garbagey piece of meat that's sleeping. What kind of insanity? What kind of chutzpah? We were just up there in the Rakia, and there's the Merkava. Who the heck is this piece of dirt? And so they wanted to beat him up. And so the Yardim was stackling the Yute Shomata, they were going to swallow him alive. Bolu Sakune. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu miyad v'nei Hashem nitzav alav. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu immediately appears over him to protect him from these malachim. Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, let me tell you something. If the Pasuk wouldn't have said this, it would be an incredible chutzpah to even say such words. But il malei mikra katuv yev shalom ro. When it says, Hine Hashem nitzav alav, the vision is essentially ke adam shemei nifal b'no. You've got a father, there's a heat wave, his little infant is sleeping in the crib, he feels so bad for the poor child, he has to protect him from the heat. He goes in there, there's no air conditioning, he takes one of those Japanese fans and he fans the child. That's the vision that we have over here. What are these heated up malachim? Daddy comes, you sleep, little baby, and I'll take care of you. What a vision. So this is like the ultimate interrelationship of the actual physical child of Yaakov Avinu to the Merkava of the Shekhinah with the picture of Yaakov Avinu on top. Wow. So the entire parasha, the entire drasha, from beginning to end, understanding the meaning of Davar Shalach B'Yaakov and Nafal B'Yisrael is expressed in every one of these diukim in the pasuk. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, the Aretz Asher Ata Shochev Aleha, this land that you're lying on, I am going to be giving to you, Lazaracha. I mean, how much land is that? Understand? So he's promising him like, a couple square meters of land. I mean, this is like, you know, they do these lotteries for the schus of a dira, and it turns out, you know, it's 4 inches by 4 inches. Anyway, so this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving him. So my Rabuse, what's so great about that? Omar Rabbi Yitzchak, no, this teaches us. This is the gift of the whole Eretz Yisrael. Melamed shekiplak Kadosh Baruch Hu l'chol Eretz Yisrael. Again, it's similar to the vision of the Sulam taking up the entire earth. So that HaKadosh Baruch Hu folded the entire Eretz Yisrael underneath Yaakov, because again, the physical presence of Yaakov would have these massive implications for all of history. And that way, if Yaakov Avinu actually lied on Eretz Yisrael, that would make it easy for his children to just walk in and take over it. So in order sh'tein nochali kabesh l'banav. And so, getting back to the fight. Come on, man, we're back to the action. This is all very exciting, but I mean, we'd rather see the action. So anyway, Yaakov Avinu now is on top of the Sarah Shalesov, who's begging for mercy. Shalcheni, let me go, let me go. Ki Allah Shachar, it's light. Says Yaakov, hey, baby, what's your problem? You scared of the cops or something? What is this? All of a sudden, it's light? Why are you running away? Ganavata, you're probably some kind of gangster. A ganav, perhaps. Or a kavyustis. Maybe you're a genevadam, a kidnapper. So you're afraid you're going to get caught? Aha! So I keep, now I know who you are. No, no, he says to Yaakov. Actually, I'm a malach. And from the day that I've been created, I've been waiting to say Shira. And it's never been my turn until this minute, obviously, because this is the first moment that this malach is now under the rishus of Yisrael. That makes his life meaningful. So now I have to say Shira. So from the day that I was made, lo yigiyaz mani lo mashira ad achshav, but I've got to go, I've got to go. And this proves Rabbi Chanan Olam Rav's statement. The Omer of Chanan Olam Rav, shalosh kitot shel malachei asharet omrot shira b'chol yom. So you've got three of these groups. One of them says Kadosh, and one of them says Kadosh, and one of them says Kadosh Hashem Tzvakot. But these are three different groups. No, that can't be true. Meitve. It says in the Brayta that Chavim in Yisrael if Ne'akadosh Baruch Hu Yoter Mimalachei Asharet, you can see that Yisrael is more Chaviv than even the Malachei Asharet, because Yisrael, they can say Shira Ta'akadosh Baruch Hu at any time. Whereas the Malachei Asharet are given rights to say it only one time in the day. And some say, a day? What are you talking about? They're lucky if they got one chance in a week. And some say, no, one chance in a month. No, not one chance in a month. It's one chance in a year. No, it's not in a year. It's in a seven-year shvias. No, it's not in a shvias. It's one time in a yovel. That's 50 years. And others say one time ever. They get one chance at Shira. Anyway, and furthermore, Yisrael amazkirin et Hashem achashtei tevot, shenam ashma Yisrael, and then they say Hashem. So they can say the Shem of Hashem with just an introduction of Shema Yisrael, two words. And the Malachi Asharis, they have to say three words. Kadosh, 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 Hashem. But what does that show? That they're maskirin the Shem after three words. And the way Reb Chanina said it, the last group said Kadosh Hashem after one word. So then this Brayta proves that he's wrong. Furthermore, in Malachi Asharit omrim Shira Lamala, they can't say a word until Klal Yisrael first says Kedusha. Then they can say it. Only after the Koch Ve'Boker, the Klal Yisrael, they sing together. Then Vayariu Kol B'nei Elohim, then all of the Malachim have a right to talk. But until that time, says Yom, nothing. Anyway, but what do you see from here? That they say Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. According to Reb Chanano, it's the last group said on its own, Kadosh Hashem Tzvakot. So that can't be true. Ela, so what Reb Chanano must have said was, Achat Omeret Kadosh, Achat Omeret Kadosh, Kadosh, Achat Omeret Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh Hashem Tzvakot. But wait a minute. Then it says, Baruch Kivod Hashem. That's only two words, Baruch Kivod and then Hashem. So then that means the very next pasuk tells me in Yecheskel that you can actually say it only after two words. No, it doesn't say the Malachim say that. It says the Ofanim the Chayot HaKodesh say Baruch Kevod Hashem. The Ofanim and Chayot HaKodesh are much greater than just a plain old Malach. And therefore, they are the ones that can say it after two, but the Sraphim and so on, Kadosh, 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 that came from the pasuk that says, Asrafim omdim mimalo. And the Sraphim are nowhere near as important as the Ofanim and the Chayot HaKodesh. Or maybe you could say, Kimad ityayev reshuta ityayev. Since we already said Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakot, you already mentioned HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. Okay, so now it's not such a big deal to say Baruch Kevod Hashem. To be continued, Bezrat Hashem, if the good Lord actually grants us, we shall meet once again.